The harder I'm going to yell, the more they're going to yell. So it's going to be a combination of the Kava Yashar shir, and because tonight is the holiest night of the year, according to the big rabbis, it's called Zeis Chanukah. All 36 hours that we spoke about last week, the Or HaGadol, the hidden light that God brings down to the world, it all comes together tonight and tomorrow. Zeis Chanukah, it's called. This is Chanukah, this last day. That's why I felt that it's very important I give a shir tonight. It would have been a lot easier to go in there and dance the whole night and play the drums. But I felt that being that it's the last night of Chanukah and the Greeks wanted to stop us from learning Torah, it would be falling into their hands if I didn't give a shir tonight. So first we're going to learn a little bit of Kava Yashar, and then we're going to go into a different subject matter. So the Kava... What? Then we'll see what happens. You never know. Okay. All right. I don't know what that is in there. That's not something I know how to play the drums to. It sounds like exactly what I'm going to speak about tonight. Greek culture. Okay, but anyway, let's learn a little bit of Kava Yashar. So the Kava Yashar says the following. Lahodos, to thank, Lahalel, to praise, Yisbarach Shemaya Kodesh Baruch Hu, God, Alanes on the miracle, Agadol, the great miracle, Shasa Kodesh Baruch Hu, Levasin, Biyam Mehem, Mehat Yechus HaRasha, Melch Yavon, Shasa Kamarois, Lam Yisrael. In the days of Antiochus, who was the head general of the Greeks, he was the king of Greece, who did many bad things to the Jews. Hashem Rachma Ruchadav Hashem Chalais Lovash Bidne Nakam. And God took revenge on the Greek Empire. As we know today, the Greek Empire, there's nothing left of it. All that's left of the Greek Empire is Greek salad. That's all that's left. You go to Garden of Eden, you say, can I get a Greek salad? Hold the olives. That's it. What else? Or there's something in America like, I don't understand what you're talking about. You're talking Greek, right? That's it. There's nothing left of them. People go a little bit on a boat, a little cruise to Greece. It's not happening, right? Well, the Olympics are not even Greece, whatever. So there's really not much left of the empire. The only thing that is left of the empire, very good, which we're going to talk about today, is the Olympics. They started the Olympics. That was their thing. They started in Greece, was the first Olympiad, and that still exists today. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. But Lamaisa, the Jewish nation, we destroyed them. Five soldiers, five Maccabees, and their old father went against the whole Greek army, and in the end, we destroyed their whole army, which we'll talk about. So he says the following, the two main generals who captured the whole world. They fought the Romans, they fought the whole world, they captured the whole world. This was the United States Army, with all the tanks and the airplanes and everything. Right? Who were the two generals? Bagris, and the other one was called Nicanor. Nicanor was killed first, and Bagris was killed second. Actually, Bagris ran away. Bagris, they burnt. They burnt him in public. Why they burned him, the Jews? Because Bagris, what happened was, there were a bunch of Jews in a cave that ran away from the Greeks to keep Shabbos. And Bagris came with his army, and he told the Jews that if they come out, just keep the door locked, that door locked. He said if they come out of the cave, and they machal Shabbos, they'll let them live. And the Jews said no. So Bagris took a bunch of trees, and he lit them up outside the cave. And all the Jews inside, it was 400 men and women. It was 1,000 men and women. They all suffocated from the smoke. He killed them in a very terrible way. So later on, when the Jews captured Bagris, they passed on him to burn him at the stake as a punishment for what he did to them. So Nicanor was killed first, Bagris was second. Antiochus went into a boat and committed suicide. He jumped in. This was brought down. So they were done. They were finished. And the whole army was given to Klal Yisrael. And there, that same way, all the enemies of God should be destroyed. The Chashmonaim came to the Beis HaMikdash. They found a little can of oil, a little bottle of oil, that was signed, that was sealed by the Kohen Gadol. This bottle of oil we spoke about last week was a miraculous bottle of oil that came from Yaakov Avinu, and they used it to anoint Shlomo HaMelech, David HaMelech, Shaul HaMelech, all the kings. Any Kohen that became a Kohen Gadol that needed Mashiach, needed to be anointed with oil, he was anointed with this oil. It would only light one day. And God who lived in the Beis Hamikdash, Asa Neis, he did a miracle. Shoy Hashem and Hudelik Shmoni Yamim lasted 8 days. Atchit Chukka Kanam Latar Atzman Shiva Yamim, because the Kahanim took 7 days for a Kohen to become Tahar, and then he would go to the Mikvah, and then he'd be ready. So they needed 8 days, and it lasted 8 days. Akach Biyom Hashmini, Hutzukal Asa Shemin, Shunasi Petahira. And that Kohen, when he became Tahar, he would make the olive oil, he would make the oil for the Menorah. Okay, therefore, Hukrach Hashem Chi LP and Neis, Lahadlik Shmoni Yamim, Aresa Tahara. The oil had to burn until the Kohen became tar. Alkein, therefore, the Zichron HaNeis, in order to remember the Neis, LaYamush, BeYisrael, Mikol Dov, Do Lash Shmoniz, MeChanukah LaHadlik Neis. Everybody has to keep Chanukah. And we see even the irreligious Jews, you know, you go to Toys R Us, whatever it is, you see even the irreligious Jews who don't keep anything, they keep Chanukah. They put that menorah, the electric menorah, in their window, and then they buy Chanukah presents. Shein Neresh Al Mitzvah. We see that God likes candles that are lit for Mitzvah. Like it says in Yeshaya, Ba'urim Kavdu Hashem. In order to honor God, you should light up things. Anything that's lit, Shabbos candles, Hanukkah candles, Yard Sale, anything that's lit for a mitzvah, there's no measurement in this world for the size of that mitzvah. If we would have Ruach HaKodesh, we would be dancing if we understood what it is just to light a candle. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit tonight. The national mitzvah is not going to be mitzvah al pi Hashem. Okay. The rabbi goy mashal cuz we don't see a nigger yom shalom with shana. He says, "Pa machas ba li yodi al yaday national mitzvah kilo herol min shamayim." The last new harmonia of amitz kach mirkiyo pa li shara at kan. He just says that one time I lit a candle and from that candle they opened up the gate in shamayim and I saw things through the gate of light. There's a gate in shamayim called the gate of light. Shamati pi moy al pi kabala shinyun hu Kachar Rabbi Shlomo Luria says in his Yam Shel Shlomo, Eroloi Shoyle Rak Ner Kon Delik Lefonov. He had a little candle that was burning in front of him. V'hayizman Karvli Chabois, and it should have gone out. V'hayadolak Kamashoz Yosmi Shlomo Rabbi Nero Shlomim, and it ended up burning 3 or 4 times the amount of time that it should have burned. V'zeh Eidolav Tamid Evignechtoi, and sitting next to him watching this was his student and his grandson. V'zeh Lashoinam. Bal Haneh Hikab Benerik Yashem Imoi. The person who lit the Ner realized that God was with him. Okay. It happens to be that I heard a story not that long ago of a big Mekubal, and his Talmud that used to learn by him said that he used to have a little thing of oil with a candle, with a wick, and it just kept burning and burning and burning. The oil didn't go down. So such a thing. So we see from here, and then Kaba Yosha says that there were times where there were candles that would only, in those days, they didn't have lights. And the candle was expensive. So the rabbis used to buy a little candle. That's all they were able to learn. So he says, I saw my Rebbe that the candle just kept burning and burning and burning. It didn't burn. It didn't go out. So he says, why? That ner shel mitzvah, nimshel by kedusha el yoina. A candle that's done for a mitzvah, it has a very special holiness. Hama'ir l'malah lokas by tzini kadishin. Because when you light a candle here, it lights a candle there. It's brought down in Kabbalah. I don't know exactly what this means. But when you light a yard site licht, right? When someone dies, so you light for 7 days in the house, and then every yard site you light a candle that lasts for 24 hours, and then when they say yiskor on Yom Tovim, you also light a yiskor candle. That through that candle, through that flame, the person in the other world is able to see this world. In other words, right, we light candles when we go to Rav Shem Bayechoy and all these places. So it sort of makes a connection. It's sort of like a window. You're opening a window that the person in the other world can see what's going on in this world. Okay. Anyway, we see from there that Zohar says that the light comes down from Shemayim, and that he brings down many different stories. I'm not gonna go into the stories. Of the lights by Rav Shimon by Yechoy, and different big tzaddikim that lit candles. Okay, by the way, he says the following. This is what's important to us. He says that the neiros of Chanukah that we light, shehei neiros kedoshim, they're holy, umekudoshim bekdushei lo, umarin al neiros umidos ayonos hashem es orim lahav mikvura. That the candles that we light on Chanukah bring down, and this is what I'm going to speak a little bit about tonight. Bring down the light from the other world. Okay, I see most of you are getting bored because you hate when I read from a sefer. So,
fire
what?
Fire
Fire corresponds to neshama. We know fire can light another fire. Neshama can light another neshama. We spoke about this. Spoke about this last week. I just want to quote just something very interesting because I spoke about the 36 hours. Listen to what he says here. He says like this: the first bracha that you make on the Hanukkah menorah, right? Bracha to Hashem again, Lachalom, Hashem Shalom, Zivon, Lahadlik Ner Hanukkah, has 13 words. If you count the words in the first bracha, it has 13 words. Okay. When you say the bracha, which you just said tonight and all the other nights, you should think of the Yud Gimel Midas, Hashem Hashem Kel Racham Chan and Erech Apayin Rav Chesed. You should have that in mind. He says the second bracha, She'asen Yisrael Avoseinu, Vayom Ehem Aman, that has 13 also. Okay, and that's the 13 Midas of Racham. You put them together, you have Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, you have 26. God's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, equals 26. The two brachas of lighting the candles brings down God's name to this world. So by the time you finish both brachas and lighting, you have created Yud Kei Vav Kei in your house at the candles, and that brings HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name into this world. That's one thing that he says over here. Now he also says the following. He says, now this was 300 years ago. This book was written 300 years ago. Okay, listen carefully to what he says. U'mikan tira b'gam ha'gadol. From here we see this terrible damage that's done. Mashri isi b'avon sin o'rabin, which I see in my days, a terrible sin 300 years ago. What did he see? Shiroi v'om like Ner HaShamis min HaNeros. A lot of people use the Ner HaShamis, and they use it for things that in those days they didn't have lights, right? They used it for things that were not for Hanukkah. What things did they use the light for? You're not going to believe it. 300 years ago, when Mukosha came, she said, "See the as I did, may oven pleely." He says, "For sure, these people are going to give in the next world. They're going to have a terrible judgment from this unbelievable pleely means this unbelievable sin. What's the sin that they did already?" With the light of the Shamus, what could you have done 300 years ago? And we weren't watching TV, right? Shemisachim ba'or HaShamus. They used the light of the Shamus, b'klafin, to play cards 300 years ago. Shekoirin Kartin. In Yiddish is called Kartin. Kuf, Aleph, Reish, Tos, Yud, Nun. Oy, b'kubiyos. Or dice. They played dice 300 years ago, in the light of the candles. Shekoirin Varfel. Varfel means to throw in Yiddish. He says, and I don't understand how people on Hanukkah, when you're making a bracha, two brachas which each will Hashem's name, and you're bringing God into your house, and then you sit down and you play cards. And we know that on Hanukkah there's this Yiddish game that's called Kvitlach, whatever it is, and this was Mamash the Yetzer Hara to destroy the whole Kedusha of Hanukkah, to sit and play God. This is not 20 years ago. This is not Atlantic City. This is 300 years ago. And the B'nai Yisaspa says, if you take the word karten, which is kuf, aleph, resh, tes, yud, nun, right? So if you add up kuf is 100, and resh is 200, is 300, tes is 9, and yud and nun is 60. The 369. If you take the word Satan, I'm sorry, 359. If you take the word Satan, so how do you get through 369? 1 minute. Kuf Resh Tes Nun. No, because he spells it, the Nei Sussel spells it, Kuf Resh Tes Nun. So if you take Kuf Resh Tes Nun, it's 359. Satan is 359. That every time you play cards, that's what it's all about. You're bringing the Satan down to this world. And I'm going to, of course today, for sure today. What's the difference between today and 300 years ago? Different game. Doesn't make a difference. Poker, smoker, didn't make a difference. In fact, Menei Sussel says that the Greeks are the ones who created, I'm going to tell you why. The Greeks created the game of cards for gambling. That's how old it is. So let's talk about the Greeks a little bit. And that's really what my share is all about tonight. There was a big machloikis between Yosef and his father. Yaakov Avinu was a believer that it's not just good enough to be a good Jew inside, but he was a very big believer that you have to be a good Jew outside, just like inside, and that your outside affects your inside. Of course, your inside affects your outside. Yosef HaTzadik argued with his father, and he said, it doesn't matter how you get dressed. Doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what kind of music you listen to. As long as inside you're good, all that other stuff doesn't make a difference. This was a big machlokes. As we know, Rashi says that Yosef used to brush his hair and he used to look in the mirror and, you know, he got dressed, you know, to kill. He wore Ksenis Pasim. He wore a jacket, you know, nicer than a Prada jacket. He wore a jacket that had all the colors. It was the most beautiful jacket in the world. He had the jacket. He was the man. He was very good looking. We spoke about that. And he was very into, like, and his father was like, if you're going to get so involved with how you look and you're always going to look in the mirror, in the end, it's going to get you into trouble. And Yosef said, no, you're wrong. What? He said his pasim was from way back, way back, way back. But I'm just kidding. He was into the way that he looked. Now, if you look in the parsha that we passed, the whole thing with Potiphar's wife, right? So we spoke about that she grabbed on to his jacket and he left his jacket in her hands. And it's brought down in Chazal that he beat her. He gave the power for everyone in this room to say no. The Yetzer Hara comes to you no matter how powerful he is. He gave us the power to say no. But what he did lose, he lost his jacket. She never gave him back his jacket. She held on to his chitzainius, to his outer garment. What does this outer garment mean? This was Yavon. In fact, it says in Rashi that he saw Dikuno Shalaviv. What saved him from this girl? That he saw the picture of his father. What picture of his father? That he saw his father was right. If you're going to go around brushing your hair and looking in the mirror all day, you're going to get in trouble with women. And his father was right. He shouldn't have done that. And if he wouldn't have done that, he wouldn't have been in trouble with her. So in the end, he saw that his father was right. He ran away, but he couldn't get away from the chitzainis. Now the Greeks, they didn't want to kill the Jews. They weren't interested in wiping us out. This was not Haman. They wanted us to assimilate. In fact, the way, it's interesting, you can learn the B'nai Suska on this, it's fascinating. But the way the Greeks got the Jews to assimilate was that they played on our weakness. What is the weakness of a Jew? We're very competitive. We're very competitive people. I'm Kishay Oyref. We want to win. We want to be at the top of the... You don't want to work for somebody. Everybody should be working for you. So they created games. They created an Olympics where they're winners and champions and competition. And they knew that there's no one more competitive than the Jew. So they played on that. And the Jews used to come to the Olympics. Whether they were in the Olympics or not in the Olympics, as players, it doesn't say. But that's what got them to leave yeshiva. They left yeshiva to go see the soccer games and the football games and all the different games that went on and the discus throwing and all the different games that went on. When you went to the amphitheater to watch the games, what was at the amphitheater? Around the amphitheater were different avodah zarah. There was Venus, the goddess of love. There was Zeus. There was Hercules. There was all these different gods. And the Jews got very into the Olympics and that whole lifestyle. And we assimilated terribly. Don't think that we won this war and like the Jews walked out of the Greek Empire. We lost a lot of Jews. A lot of Jews. They didn't get killed, but they joined the Chavra. And it's interesting because in sports, I was a big sports fan, very big sports fan. And there were kids in my class that were such sports fans, and today there are guys that are such sports fans that it's no longer sports. It's avoid the Zora. What do I mean by avoid the Zora? I'm not going to get up here and tell you not to go to football games or baseball games. But when it becomes your life, when all you know is who the player, what the player, what the average is, how many games they win, when you sit and you listen in your car, you see, even I, as big a sports fan as I wasn't that stupid that I could listen to WNYN, whatever it was at that time, and they would have these two Mishugam who have an IQ of maybe 10, right? And these two guys who are very famous names, you know, I don't want to say it on, I don't want them to get insulted. And people, I would get into their car and they would listen to these two guys discussing a fantasy trade. Now, what is a fantasy trade? A fantasy trade means like this. if the Yankees would trade these three guys to the Red Sox. But the Red Sox wouldn't trade straight, so they would have to trade with Philly. But Philly would have to trade with Detroit. So if Detroit would trade with Philly, who would trade with Boston, who would trade with the Yankees, and they would trade all these different guys, the Yankees would come in first. Hello. They're not trading. They can't trade. They're all signed up to contracts. So what are you talking about? But it's called fantasy. It's the if world. Now, you got guys sitting in their car, and they're like, wow. And these guys are like, whoa, this is like unbelievable. Mishugam. They're not talking about real trades. They're talking about fantasy trades. What happened? What happened in America in sports? Came out ESPN1, ESPN2, ESPN3, right? Sports channels. What's this? What's that? What's this? What's that? So the Jewish kid is like, Dad, what could be wrong? I'm watching sports, right? I watch sports. What's the end of sports? What happens is, but it becomes an avoid desire that you can sit. There are kids that sit and watch sports 10 to 12 hours a day. How can you watch sports 10 to 12 hours a day? Right? Because it became an avoid desire. But not only that, what did the Yavanim of America do? What are they? They're brilliant. Because this is Yavan. Sports was created by Yavan, by the Greeks. Competition, the whole problems in schools today, the whole problem in life today, was created by the Yavanim, was created by sports. Why? Rob Wallstein's not going to get up and talk bad about sports. I'm a hockey player and a basketball player and a Yankee fan and a Ranger fan and a Giant fan. I'm not some weird guy that came out of, you know, the Amazon woods, you know, spewing forth sports is bad for you. That's not what I'm here for. I want to explain to you what they did with sports. Let me explain to you what they did with sports. And I'm part of it. And any guy that plays ball, anyone in here that ever played ball, we're all part of it. We're all sick. Every one of us is sick. I'll tell you why we're sick. Because what's brought into our heads, what's knocked into American kids, to the whole world's heads, is it's not how you play the game. That's gone. That was in the 50s by, what was his name? The Green Bay guy, coach. No, the coach, the famous football coach. What? Lombardi. So Vince Lombardi came out, the big Vince Lombardi. You're not supposed to know that. Vince Lombardi came out and he said, it's not the way you play the game. It's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. It's not important whether you win or lose. Today, that's gone. My coach in hockey said, Wallstein, it's not whether you win or lose. It's whether you win. That's it. There is no lose. So what the Greeks put into all of us is that it doesn't matter how hard you try, and it doesn't matter how much work you put into it. If you don't win, you're a loser. If the Yankees win 100 games, but they don't win the World Series, everybody walks out of Yankee Stadium. I've been there, okay? When they lost the World Series, and everybody walks down the steps, you would think hundreds of thousands of people were massacred, okay? They walk down, nobody's talking, nobody's saying a word. It's death in New York City. One second, they won 100 games, they got into the World Series. So they lost, but look how far they got. All the home runs, everything they did, shum davar, doesn't mean anything. And it's the same thing in yeshiva. I want to get up. I want to change all the yeshivas. Do I have the power to change all the yeshivas? No. But this month of Shabbos, I'm speaking in front of 1,000 people, and I'm going to get up and say something. I'm probably going to get tables thrown at me. I don't care. Okay? I'm going to get up because I'm a Rebbe for 30 years. And I'm going to say, you're not allowed to give kids tests with marks. And that a report card should have one mark on it. One mark. Effort. That's it. The kid gets 20s on his test, but he's trying, you give him an aleph. And if a kid gets 100 on his test and he's not trying, you give him a dalet. Because God, the Jewish religion, our religion, is not about winning. There is no competition in the Torah. Look in the whole Torah. There's no mitzvah that, okay, the guy who puts his tefillin on first, that's the one Hashem's going to listen to. The guy who davens the best, that's who Hashem's going to listen to. In fact, the Torah teaches you that of stories, the famous story where a guy didn't even know how to speak, and the giant, the Ari HaKadosh, at the end of Yom Kippur, was waiting for the gates to open, and he couldn't open. And this guy walked in, a peasant, and he didn't know how to pray, and he didn't know nothing, and the only thing he knew how to do was play a flute. And he sat down, and he saw everybody standing at the end of Yom Kippur, waiting for the gates to open, nothing was happening. He took his flute out, and he started to play his flute. And they all said, you're kidding, your kippah's just over, you can't play a flute. That Rizal sitting up there with his talus waiting for the gates to open, because he used to, the end of Yom Kippur, he used to jump around and sing when he saw that the tefillahs were accepted, and they weren't accepted, the dates were closed. And in walks this moron, right, in sheepskin, and he's playing a flute and shul. And that Rizal said to everyone, let him play. And this guy played his flute with such feeling, and all of a sudden the Ariya Kodesh was jumping up and down. He was saying Kadesh, he was singing, he was dancing. They came up to him and said, what's up? He said, all our tefillahs could not get through. The Satan closed the gates. This guy, he can't speak a word of Hebrew. He gave to Hashem the best of what he was. He was a shepherd who played flute. He played flute like nobody ever played flute before. And the Arizal wrote down that all the gates in Shemayim smashed down like a grenade hit him, like a nuclear bomb hit him. And all the tefillahs of the whole Klal Yisrael and the whole world got through because of this sheep herder's flute playing. So Judaism is not about being the best. And Judaism is not about being a winner. Judaism is about amelus, work, trying. Hashem doesn't want anyone in this room to be Rav Moshe Feinstein. He wants Friedman to be the best Friedman. He wants Schwartzberg to be the best Schwartzberg. And he knows the power that he gave and the IQ that he gave to the person. And that's all he wants. That's all he wants is the best. And the Greeks were the exact opposite. You can imagine, you ever watch Olympics? Think about this for a second. Thousands of athletes come to this one country. The girls in gymnastics, right? They have these Romanian and Russian girls. So many years ago when I was still not such a good guy, and I still used to watch television, so they did a documentary on one of these girls. And from when they're 5 years old in Russia, they wake them up at 4:30 in the morning, in the cold, in a gym that's as big as this room, freezing. And they put them through 5 hours of practice. And they start at 5 years old, and they do this till they're 16. And they come to the Olympics, and you have this girl, her whole life, her friends are going out, and they're having a good time, and she's getting up every morning, in the cold, working her brains off. For one moment on the crossbeam, where a bunch of Japanese, American, German judges are sitting there who never did anything in their life, and they're sitting there, all right, 9.2, all right, 8.7. This girl worked her whole life. There's no feelings whatsoever. At the end, there's one girl that wins, and all other 40 are sitting there and they're crying. And what are we teaching? What are we teaching the world? That if you're not the best, you're nothing. Their names are not mentioned. Their name's not on your Coca-Cola bottle. Their name's not on your Wheaties box. They're nobody. You'll never hear from them. You'll never hear about them. What about all the work? Why don't they win something for all the work that they did? Zero. Nothing. The psychology that we're used to is that either you win or you're a loser. And you know why most people are in depression? Because how many people can win one race? There's only one winner in a race. They had the Boston Marathon, the New York Marathon, right, this year? So the winner, I don't know what he did it in, 2 hours and 21 minutes. Some guy that's running in the Congo his whole life from, I don't know who's chasing him, but he's being chased by a lion and he's running in the Congo. So this guy won. So he got right away $100,000 and $1 million, a bicycle, what's it called? Running shoe contract and this contract. The race started, I believe, at 8 o'clock in the morning. At 2 o'clock in the morning, some old person with one leg and a crutch, took him like 12 hours to do the race, came across the finish line. There were 10 people standing there clapping. Now you tell me, who's the real winner of this race? The Congo runner, who did it in 2 hours, or the guy that it took 12 hours and did it with one leg? Where was everybody? Where were all the cameras? Where were all the people? Where were all the Nike sneaker endorsements? Yavon. This is Yavon. He lost. I don't care he took 12 hours. He's an idiot. He should have stayed home and watched it. You know, doesn't mean anything how much you try. This is Yavon. This is the destruction of the world. Girls are anorexic. Many girls are anorexic. Why are they anorexic? Because I deal with them. Why are they anorexic? Because if they're not thin like a model, and you're not a model, then you're nothing. It's not like you're pretty anyway, it's okay. No, if I'm not a model and I don't fit in to what style says you have to fit in. I'm nobody. I'm a nothing. If I'm a nothing, then they get anorexic and they're 90 pounds and they still think they're fat. And it's the same thing with guys. People, why do they steal? Why do people steal? Guy's working, he's making money. Why does he steal? Because he feels that if he can't outdo the guy next to him, then he's a loser. You're not a loser. You're working hard. You're doing a great job. I'm a loser. Because if I don't have more money than him, competition that leads to a winner is what the Greeks taught us. And I'm not any different. I played ball my whole life to win. I got on a basketball court. There was no such thing as lose. I would bite your arm if I had to. I'd step on your shoe when you're going up for a rebound. Whatever it took, right, we played to win. And that's wrong. That's wrong. Because there's nothing wrong with playing to win. I'm sorry. But if you don't win, and you worked and you tried your hardest, then you can't get off the court depressed. You have to get off the court and say, hey, I did my best. You know, I didn't win, I didn't win. That psychology doesn't exist anymore in the world. That was the Greeks. That's what they put in by the Olympics, by the amphitheater. That's what they were trying to teach the Jews. Compete. Compete against each other. We have nothing in the Torah, anything. Looking around, you will see there's no competition. Any mitzvah that we... There's no competition. There's no winner. No such a thing. I wear a bigger pair of tzitzis. I'm a winner. I beat you. I stood longer by davening. I beat you. I kept Shabbos 12 minutes longer than you. I beat you. No. There's no competition in the Torah. Zero, zero, zero competition. And the Greeks were trying to tell us, either you win or you're a loser. You're a loser. Go to CVS. Get yourself some Prozac. Go to a therapist. Because you're a loser. And the first thing the kid says when he walks into the therapist is, I'm a loser. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. And the therapist should say, you're not a loser. Who told you you're a loser? Well, look at my marks and my test. And in sports, I always drop the ball. And everything I try to do, I fall on my face. And the therapist should say, but are you trying your best? And if you're trying your best, that's what counts. That's what counts. And that's why the whole school system is sick. It's a sick school system, and it's falling apart, and it's destroying our children. Because the whole thing in class is the 95, or the 100, or the 105, and the kid that gets a 60. So now, they came up with a new thing. We don't want a kid to feel like he's a loser when he gets a 60, so what do? We label him. You're not a loser, you're ADD, you're ADHD, you're bipolar, you're this, you're that. Take a couple of pills. And Nebuch, it's not your fault. Instead of saying, it doesn't matter, you don't have to get 100, man. You're sitting in my class, you're trying, I love you, just keep trying. Who says that? Anyone that says that gets fired. I mean, imagine PTA tomorrow night in my school. If a parent walks in, and the kid's getting 40s, and I say I'm happy. I'm gone. I say, oh, no, they got to get rid of Wallace. He's crazy, he likes 40s. The parents themselves are in a place where their kid has to be the best in the class. We're destroying our own children. You got to be the best. You got to be the all-star. You got to be the best in your class. You got to be the best in whatever you do. And it's not fair. And it's not right. And that's America today. And that's Yavon. And they did such a good job. They created Olympics. They created a game. One winner. That's it. A gold medal. Yeah, the silver medal and bronze medal. But those people never get anything. And they're crying because they were 1 second away from getting the gold medal. I'd rather get nothing. You want to come in second? Then you're still a loser. You're a millimeter of a millimeter of a second away from him. If you would have ran a little faster, you'd be standing there. So the guy who's 10 seconds later, so you're fat and you can't run. Okay, it's not your fault. But the guy that's 1 millimeter away, I don't want to be that guy. Because then you start, I could have ran one. I could have been there. So what do? On television, they put this person, imagine, you can't even imagine such a thing. Because none of us tried that hard. Imagine this little girl. And she's on this board, you know, where you got to do all those flips and stuff. And she tripped a drop, and she lost a tenth of a millionth of a point. And she lost the whole thing from that, right? And now she has to sit. I mean, where's the Ben Adam Lechavero? She has to sit, all of them on the bottom of the podium, and up walks the one that won. And they play, they drop their flag, and they play their music, and she stands there with a gold medal. What about the 10 people that lost? Where's the feelings for them? Where's the midos? Where's the Benon Lachavero? Give her the gold medal in the locker room. Why these girls work just as hard as her? They didn't perform as well? Doesn't mean they didn't work as well. Nothing. Not only that, in their face, they give the gold medal to the other person. This is keneged the Jewish nation. This is exactly the opposite of who we are. And this is what they put into America. Not into America, I mean, how many years? Thousands of years ago. This competition where there's only one winner. And therefore, every sport has to have a championship. Why? Why? Why can't you just leave the team that comes in first, that came in first, they're the winner? No, World Series. Super Bowl. Super Bowl, the biggest thing in the United States. Super Bowl. Right? Right. Stupid Bowl. So you take two teams, right? You take two teams. Sometimes they're not the best teams. They're in the middle because the best teams had a bad day. And you put them up there and you pay them billions of dollars and the advertisements are worth half a minute, right? I wanted to get up there and like, we should buy a half a minute. Watch TorahAnytime.com. How long does it take to say that? 5 seconds. It'll cost us $500,000 in the middle of the Super Bowl. The whole place can see. Watch Torah Anytime. Listen to Carl Ushan, you know? Millions of dollars for two teams to play one game where it's just, you know, anything can happen. And it's not always the best team. Why don't they just let the team that won the most games be the champion? No. We got to play up. We got to play up that there's one winner. And all the other ones, they broke their heads. Half of them, their limbs are disconnected from their bodies. Right? They played a whole year. They got killed. Nothing. Zero. And when they lose, they walk off the field. They have a 10-0. You know, this is really a boy's shit. So all the girls are listening. You can hang up Carl Lushen because we're talking sports here. So if you're listening to Carl Lushen, this is not for you. Right? All the guys, if you ever, when they lose the game, right? Forget the Super Bowl, getting to the Super Bowl. Right? The team that loses, you see these big grown men. Right? Big guys, they're 350 pounds, 26 years old, knocking guys' heads off a whole year. When they lose, you see them on their knees with their head on their football helmet, crying like two-year-olds. Yeah. And the camera zooms in on them. And what does this teach our children? If you don't win, you're a broken, crybaby loser. So this kid goes the next day in yeshiva, and he goes to the gym. He has a choose up, 3-on-3, and he loses. And he walks away, and he says, if the NFL champion professional player is so broken, and he's getting $13 million for crying on that helmet, I'm not getting anything. I'm really a loser. And I've been trying to tell this to teachers. I taught kids more on the football field than I teach them in the class. Because I could throw a ball perfectly to a kid, and if he drops it, right? I'd like to tell him what I think of him, but I won't. Right? I'm going to run over to him and say, don't worry about it. Next time you'll catch it. I might never throw it to him again. But next time, in 3 years from now, when I throw it, you'll catch it. No, but you go over to him and you give him another chance. And you give him another chance. And you know what? Guess what? He's going to catch that ball. But what happens if you watch games? If a guy drops the ball, well, the team says, we don't deal with you anymore. How's he going to ever learn how to play football? If you don't want to deal with him because he doesn't know how to catch a ball, how's the kid going to learn how to play basketball? But it's so ingrained in the sports world. It's so ingrained in us that you have to win. And if you don't win, you're a loser. You're a loser. You're finished. You're done. What did they do? I'm going to take you a step further. What did Yavon do? What did the Satan do? The Satan said, but there's a game that you could play. That's a game of luck, and you might win just out of luck. Yitaka have no brains. You can't shoot a ball to save your life. You can't win in anything. But if you play cards, and you play poker, or you play blackjack, or you throw dice, you don't have to be smart. You have to be lucky. What is the power? I know a lot about gambling. What is the power of gambling? Why do people who work a whole week, and I'm talking about the guys who steal, the guys who work a whole week, go to Atlantic City, the guy made $700, he worked 50 hours to make that money. How is it possible? He's a smart guy, right? He's the brilliant guy at work. He's the accountant. He's brilliant. The smart guy gets onto a bus, drives 2 hours, sits in Atlantic City, and wastes his $700 in 3 hours, walks out, lost all the money that he did a whole week. Where does that come from? This is a smart man. And the answer is, I'll tell you where it comes from. That guy never won anything in his life. So he is so desperate. in this Yevanim, in this Greek psychology, to win, it's worth taking a chance. 700, 7,000, 70,000, 700,000. It's worth taking a chance to be able to get up from that table and say, I beat the house. You didn't beat the house. You were lucky. What did you beat the house? But it's such a good feeling, right? Everyone in this room. It's such a good feeling to win. We're so psyched up to win that we will take any chance with anything just to be a winner. And that's what gambling is based on. If you knew you were going to lose, you're not going to play. That's a person who's very stupid. You're thinking that I'm going to win. And when you win, I have seen guys win who their wife abuses them. At work, they're abused. They haven't won anything in their life. No one's ever said anything. And the guy sits by the table and he wins. All of a sudden, he's like, cash me my chips, man. It's like, he's like in the Wild West. Like, he's got, you know, the fastest hands on the gun. He's like, all of a sudden, the guy became a new guy, a new man. And like, he turns to the waitress. He's like, hey, if you give me a drink, I'll give you a big tip. You know, I'll give you $10. And I'm like, whoa, what happened to this guy? He won. And the Greeks tell you if you win, you made it. The next 20 hands you're going to lose. And the only one that's going to make money is the waitress who got the $10, you understand? She's the only one. You're going to lose all your money. But for that moment, guys, for that moment of winning, we're willing to sacrifice anything. The Torah says, you don't have to win. You don't have to finish the job. Hashem says, I just want to see you try. You don't have to be the best davener. You don't have to be the best learner. That's not what Hashem wants. He just wants you to try. And we have totally lost that. Our yeshivas have totally lost that. I'll say it on camera. It's all about competition. My yeshiva, they learned 30 pages. Really? Well, I guess I got to push the kids in mine to learn 40. Oh, you all learned 40? Mine now learned 50. He's learning Rishonim, mine's going to learn Achrayim. And the poor kid's stuck in the middle of the competition of all the schools. So 1 year he has to learn Gemara, 10 pages. Next year, 20 pages. That yeshiva did 20 pages. The next year, 40 pages. And we're killing our kids. Killing them. My daughter is learning more than I ever learned in my life. I'm not kidding. Her homework is 35 pages long. What for? What are you doing? Because it's competition. Because my school has to win. That's Yavon. That's the Olympics. I got to win. There's one winner. The rest of you sit on the floor and watch me get my gold medal. What is this business at a graduation of having one kid? What is that? What kind of a shagah is this? Judaism? All the other kids that are sitting there that couldn't learn, that worked the whole year, that went to substitutes and tutors and went through all kinds of stuff, and Nebuch, they got a 60 on the test. She's the, what do they call her, the main one? Valedictorian! What a speech! She makes a speech! She has 175 IQ! She didn't work a minute! And this kid sitting there, she killed herself! Is there a valedictorian of effort? Did anyone ever go to a school where there's a valedictorian of effort? No such thing. This is Yavon. This is what they did to us. Even in our Torah places, it became Yavon. It's competition. How much more I can learn better than you? Where do we see this in the Torah? Where does it say this anywhere? Where do we see this in the Gemara? That one Tana had competition with another. He may not have agreed. This was the Olympics. This is Hanukkah. God shows us that every great thing he did it from the smallest place. When he wanted to give his Torah, did he pick the biggest mountain? In the most lush place with the greatest flowers, he picked a little lowly sand dune. That's all it was, in a desert with some grass growing. Because he wanted to show, it's not about how great you are. Torah is about how hard you try. When he wanted to do a miracle on Hanukkah, he did it with a little teeny can of oil. He could have made a miracle that they found a huge can of oil. He could have made a miracle that the Greeks didn't find it. God can do anything. So God had to make it from a little can of oil. Could have made a miracle that the Greeks broke everything. And one can of oil, they didn't touch. Hashem said, my miracles come from the small people. Mashiach. Mashiach's not coming from a Gal Hadoth child. So Mashiach's going to come from the most unexpected guy that you could imagine in the world. Don't look at me. I'm a Kohen. I can't be Mashiach. And it's not me. But it might be one of you. 100%. That's what it says. Where does Ruth come from? Ruth comes from Lot. Lot got his daughters pregnant. Okay? Of course it was. We know that it was a holy thing. And they did it for the right reason. But Ruth doesn't come from a Rebbetzin or a rabbi. She comes from Moab. She's a Geyres. She's not even a Baal Tshuva. She's a Geyres. Who in this room would marry a Geyres? What a shidduch. You imagine such a shidduch? I'd like you to go out with a girl. What's her name? Ruth. Tell me a little bit about her parents. Oh, they're Goyim. From where? Moab. You know the nation that really hates the Jews? That's your in-laws. Anyone here going out with her? Absolutely not. That shidduch's not happening. Or maybe Moshe Rabbeinu shidduch. I said, today, I don't know if Moshe Rabbeinu would have gotten a shidduch so easy. He wasn't a learning boy. He was working. He was a shepherd. I don't know if anybody would have gone out with him. How many years, Moses? How many years are you going to learn? I'm working in the desert. You know, I'm a shepherd. I'm not going out with my daughter. I want a boy who's learning 10 years. Yeah. David HaMelech. No shidduch for that boy. He's also working in the desert. No. And where did he come from? What did they say about him? And not only that, let's check into Moshe Rabbeinu's, what yeshiva did he go to? Huh? Anyone here know? No. Cairo High. That's where he went. Who's taking a son-in-law from Cairo from public school? He didn't go to yeshiva. He was brought up in Paro's house. And let's take a look at his parents. They didn't love him much. They abandoned him and stuck him in a little boat and stuck him in the water. Who's marrying this boy? Oh, we found the girl for Moshe Rabbeinu. She's willing to go out. He's not a learning boy. And he went to public school. But the parents just found out something about him. And it's really a big problem. He stutters. He has a disability. So let's look at Moshe Rabbeinu. He had a disability, was brought up in Paro's house, ran away, fugitive, abandoned by his parents, right? A working guy in the desert. And he still was Moshe Rabbeinu. Because to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu met Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not tonight's Chabura, he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to go to Mitzrayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, maybe God has also Greek mythology. Maybe God believes in this also. He said, I can't talk. I'm not the man. I don't have the sprach. I can't talk. I stutter. They're going to laugh at me. Hashem said to him, it's not what it's about. I specifically, listen carefully. If you look in the Pasha, he said, I'm not using Aaron. Aaron's a good speaker. I don't want to take from the best. I want to take Klai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim from someone who has a learning disability, from someone who has a speech defect. I want to kiss the lips of someone who has burnt lips. I want to speak peh peh to a person who's a low on the chain. I don't want a big orator and I don't want a big speaker. All the nisim and all the miracles that happened came from very quiet, small places. And therefore, what the Greeks were trying to teach us is not Judaism. It's the opposite of Judaism. And parents should learn this too, and I'm going to speak about this Matzah Shabbos. It's not about that your kid's not the best in the class. Who cares? Where does it say in the Torah that it's competition? That's what it says in Greek. That's what the Greeks taught us. Just work with him that he's trying his hardest. I'll tell you a story that happened in my yeshiva. There was a kid in third grade, maybe fourth grade, he was in fourth grade. This kid, everyone in the class hated him. You know that one kid that nobody wants to talk to? That was this kid. They called him stupid. They called him all kinds of names. He got nothing more than a 25 on his test ever. He was doing miserable. And the principal came to me and said, Ray Wallstein, we got to get him out of the school. He doesn't get along with nobody. And he's getting 20s. I said, I want to try a trick. Before we throw him out of school, let me try something. This was 15 years ago, maybe 13 years ago. And I pulled this kid over by lunch. And I sat down and I said, I want to talk to you. Okay. He wasn't really a brilliant kid. I said, so what chumash are you learning? He told me the pasha he's learning. I said, oh, I have a secret to tell you. I once learned a Dvar Torah on this parsha. I have to tell it to you. Okay. So I told him, I remember it was some kind of gematria, that something equaled something. I don't remember what it was, but I told him something equals something. And he was so excited. Fine. I waited 2 days. I came into his classroom. I realized he's not putting nothing together. This guy wasn't that kind of sharp kid. I came into his classroom. I said, guys, I was assistant principal. I had a right to walk into the classroom. Okay, what parsha are you learning? I said, okay. I'm going to ask a question. I know nobody in this class knows the answer, but if someone guesses it by accident, I'm giving the whole class 15 minutes extra recess for the whole week. Now, toss that might sound stupid. To fourth graders, that is $1 billion. That is actually more than $1 billion. Okay, I asked a question. Of course, everyone thinks they know. Ooh, 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 I go through the whole class, nobody has any idea. I come to this kid, he doesn't realize that I told him the answer 2 days ago. The whole thing's a setup, right? And he goes, ooh, I know. This equals this. And the other guys are like, and I'm like, that is absolutely amazing. You got me. I really wasn't, I didn't want to give you extra recess, but I turned to the teacher. I said, I can't lie to these children. And I got up and I gave this guy a big hug and a kiss. I said, you were brilliant. And the class, rest of the week, you have 15 minutes extra recess. These kids jumped out of their chairs. They jumped. They mauled him. They jumped on him. They were all over him. They were kissing him and hugging him. 15 minutes, a whole week. It was like, you know, they didn't even ask him, how did you know? What did you know? They didn't care, right? He became the man. He became the man in the class. All of a sudden, everybody was in love with him. Everybody wanted to share their snack with him. Everybody wanted to talk to him. By fifth grade, he was getting 50s, 60s. By the time he graduated my class, he was an 80 student. All he needed to know was that, and I fooled him into it. I fooled him into it. But the truth is that I knew that the minute he knew something, he tried and the right answer came out, that he was going to fly. I knew he'd never be a 100 student, but I knew he was going to fly. That's all Hashem wants from us. You don't have to be a 100 student. You don't have to be the best Jew in the world. You don't need to be the best Jew in the world. He just wants you to try. And what we learn is that trying is not enough. That it's not how you play the game, but it's whether you win. And that's what the Greek culture taught us. And that's where we live. And that's why everyone's chasing the buck. Many people have enough money, but they want to be the winner. Because when they were the kids, they weren't the winner. They want to be the winner. They want to have more money than anyone else. They want to have more power than anybody else. They want to have the prettiest girl when they walk into the room. Even if she fights with him all day long, she's the meanest, roughest woman there. But I need to walk in the room and I have to have the prettiest. Because if you don't have the prettiest, you're a loser. And people marry the wrong people because they don't look at who they are. And people who try to make a marriage work, people who work on making a marriage, those are the marriages that work. And it doesn't have to be the best marriage in the world. You're allowed to have an argument once in a while. And you're allowed to have a disagreement once in a while. I got guys that get married and after a month they're in my house. And they want to get a divorce. Or they want to break an engagement. Because she's not perfect. Forget about him. She's not perfect. Everything has to be perfect. I only marry a winner. Everything has to be exactly perfect. Because that's what we're taught. Everything has to be perfect. If you're not perfect, you're a loser. Let's talk to her. Let's work with her. Let's work on it. And that's in everything in the world. That's in a diamond. If the diamond has a flaw, the diamond's worth $100. If it doesn't have a flaw, it's worth $1 million. This is in everything that we live in. I got to have the best computer. I got to have the latest computer. What a craziness. But I'm in the same craziness. Women, they had a whole poll in the AA. I'm a AAA, so they sent me their magazine. 20% of men today buy new cars. 80% of men lease cars. The highest percent of leases is a 2-year lease. Why? Because old car? You're a loser. You have to have every 2 years a new car, and another new car, and another new car. Women, the percentage is maybe, I think 20%, something like that, of women lease cars. Most of them buy cars. Why? Because as men, we have to have the best, the latest. I'm one of them. I should be stuck with my car more than 2 years. That's Greek. That's continuously, I have to have the best, I have to have the nice, I have to have the newest. And that's why guys buy new glasses every 6 months, and guys buy new things and you have 30 pairs of shoes, and 30 pairs, because now my shoe's out of style. And you got to have, I was just telling last night, I gave a shiur, and I was telling them that that was this big shot, and I made a contest in my eighth grade. And if you win the contest, you get a pair of new Nikes. Now last time I bought a pair of Nikes was a very long time ago. It cost me $69, very long time ago, and they had no air in them at all, no pump, no air, no nothing. They were just plain. When I was growing up, it was one pair of sneakers in the whole world. It wasn't another one. It was Keds. And that was it. They didn't have air. They had nothing. It was this thick on the bottom. And then they came out. Ooh, big time. Converse. Oh, we were going crazy. That's all you had. So, you know, I'm in that world. I'm buying a pair of sneakers. You know, okay. So he wins. And we go to Modell's in King's Plaza. And we come walking in. And there's a pair. There's a sneaker, not a pair. Because it's a pair you could steal. One sneaker. And it's up on this plastic thing, enclosed, chained. I'm like, I've seen that in when you go shopping for a fur. A pair of sneakers in a plastic thing chained. So I turn to the kid and I'm like, what's that? Like, does it take off if you let it out of the box? Like, flies on its own? Like, what's up with that? He goes, Rabbi, don't be angry. But that's the new Air Flight number 2361, Michael Jordan to the left, MC squared, this and that. And that's the pair I want. I'm like, anything that's in a chain in a box is going to cost me a lot of money. So I go up to it very slowly because I don't want to see it. And I'm old, so I have to lift my glasses to look at the numbers. And it was $299. No, no, that's not so bad. For one. Just for the one in the box. You want the other one? It's another $299. I'm like, $300 for a pair of sneakers? He's an eighth grader. How long is it going to last? It's going to last 3-4 months. His feet are growing. He's not finished growing. I'm like, he's like looking at this. This is like God. I'm serious. The pair of sneakers is like God. And I didn't know what to do. Now I have a problem because what am I teaching him here? I'm teaching him. I'm spoiling him. I'm buying him a pair. But I gave my word. And I said, any pair of sneakers, you got to keep your word. So I ended up buying it for him. My word is a word. Wait, I'm not finished. He comes to school the next day. He's not wearing them. He comes to school the day after. He's not wearing them. I walk up to him. I say, you know, I spent all that money. We have a ball game tonight, and you have gym today. Why aren't you wearing those sneakers? He said, Rebbe, are you crazy? You don't wear those sneakers. I said, what do you mean you don't wear those sneakers? So if you wear those sneakers, someone's going to step on it. It's going to get scuffed. You don't wear those sneakers. I said, what do you do with them? He says, you just keep them in your closet, and you tell everyone you got them.